Here we are. Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Yes, and I thought I'd give you the honor of being first on this morning.
I love that.
Not to set up sort of a syndrome in your mind that you're always a little bit late. I don't want to set that up.
You want me to have the joy of being
I want to have you the joy.
That yeah. You're never going to give me up. You're never going to let me down. You're never going to turn around. Yeah.
No. Nope.
I love it.
Nope. Yeah. And there's a lot of wisdom that more and more as I listen to that music.
Yes.
You can continually squeeze a lot of wisdom out of that. Useful wisdom, not just nice to think about wisdom, but actually let's translate this into super performance kind of music.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Dan,
it's so funny. I won't say who it is, but there was a very prominent business person in Canada that I had a relationship with, sort of a chatting relationship over mm-hmm. a number of years. And what I noticed is that I was always early and he was always late. Okay, for the first three meetings, I would be there 5 minutes early and he would be there 5 minutes late. And so the third occasion, he said, "Are you always early?" And I said, "Yes, I am. Are you always late?" And he said, "You're the first person who makes me conscious that I am, you know." And he said, "Because, you know, I kind of hang out with a bunch of people and, you know, yeah. we're kind of around the time we agreed on, but you're always before the time we agreed on."
Yeah, yeah.
And why do you do that? And I said, "Well, I find it relaxes me."
Mm-hmm.
And
that 5 minutes, you're absolutely right. Like when you think about that, even 5 minutes, even just 5 minutes is a big difference. And even in our world, you and I joke about the, you know, who's on, we're always at the top of the hour we're in, but it's become this back and forth thing of mm-hmm. being 2 minutes ahead or something, never five in this context. But in a physical environment, it's a big thing. Like you're saying that the hour, having an extra hour at the buffer at the airport when you're going to the mm-hmm. airport is a luxurious experience. It feels so much
yep.
more. It's a completely different experience than having mm-hmm. even 10 minutes too little.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I don't have a super watch. I have a watch which is actually just the watch component of my heart rate monitors made by Polar, who I don't even know if they're still in the, you know, still in the business anymore, you know,
right,
because all the new watches like the Apple Watch
yeah.
and everything else have incorporated what they used to do. But anyway, I have it, and I have a merchant here in the city of Toronto that when my batteries run out on my Polar watches, I have about five of them with the bands, you know, you have a chest
yes.
band that goes across. And I just, every 3 months or so, one of my team members at Coach who runs operations, you know, they're the ones who order
yeah.
things and they're dealing with outside businesses. So I just asked him if he could, you know, every quarter, you know, drop a couple of these off and have them come back, put them new batteries
yeah.
in and come back. But I always keep my watch 3 minutes early, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it does the world of good for me having my watch 3 minutes early, because if I'm on time and if I'm on time, according to my watch, I'm early. You know,
yeah.
And so what I try to do is just be, you know, when I start a workshop, we have a time with the team, which is a half hour before the workshop starts when we're going to meet and talk about the workshop.
Yeah.
And I always make sure that I'm there on time according to my watch, which means that I'm 3 minutes early for the meeting. And, it, you know, over in a day, always being, you know, a couple more minutes early for things takes a lot of the stress out, but it sort of becomes cumulative over the course of a year. I just don't, you know, I've just removed one of the big stressors that everybody talks about in their life.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is that it's a mainland, you know, I'm in the mainland and I'm 3 minutes early for a Cloudlandia event.
Right.
I mean, I consider Zoom to be Cloudlandia.
And I do too. And what we're doing. Yeah. I was sitting this morning. So I'm out in my courtyard right now. This is absolutely perfectly exactly room temperature, 72, slight breeze, blue skies. It's couldn't be better. Quiet Sunday, nothing going on outside. So I love this. But the thing that I've been contemplating this morning over coffee, and Luba and I were having a nice conversation about it just before I dialed in here, that I've been thinking about 24 hours. I've been thinking about a period, a day in the life. And I was thinking back the difference between 1992 and 2022 in the days, and projecting what could possibly be in 2052. What's likely, because that 2052 is 30 years from now, just like 1992 is 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I started out thinking about, so the first, you know, 7.5 hours of this 24 hours was sleeping. And that was true in 1992. And very little has changed about that here in 2022. And I mean, dead technology is the same. You've certainly embraced the CPAP technology, mm-hmm. You know, the things that there's some little things that we can do to optimize sleep, but the need for sleep is still
constant. Here.
We still dedicate 8 hours a day, yep. or so to that sleep, and I don't anticipate that's going to change in 2052, but maybe it will. Mm-hmm. I'm open to all the possibilities, but I just kind of,
yeah, it's really interesting.
Where are we going with that, right?
It's really interesting because I can remember maybe 20, 25 years ago, there was a bit of a fad in the business world where, you know, you should be able to get along with less sleep. In other words, mm-hmm. There was this big movement. Why are we wasting, yeah. you know, all
right.
these hours in a day on sleeping? And their goal was, if you're sleeping 8 hours, get it down to 4 hours, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and there were people who dedicated to themselves to this, like they dedicate themselves to running a marathon, you know.
Right.
But I haven't had any outstanding success stories of people being successful at that. You know, I've heard success stories of people running marathons and running many marathons, but I haven't heard anybody being really successful with the reduced sleep one. And there was a really terrific speaker, Abundance 360, last year. He was asleep, you know, he was a sleep expert.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, we have evidence that it's been this way for tens of thousands of years, that people have, you know, basically put in 8 hours of sleep, you know.
Yeah.
And or thereabouts. And he said, you know, if we didn't need it, you'd think we would have found a shortcut.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think that's it. So you look at these things that I was really kind of looking at the constructs of things, right? Like, so 1992, we had 24 hours in a day. And 2022, we still have 24 hours in a day, and 8 of it is we're setting aside for sleep, right? We've had, mm-hmm. there's technologies mm-hmm. that help us maximize and improve. I mean, the beds are, you know,
better.
Certainly the technology like CPAPs have advanced, I imagine. Mm-hmm. I don't know how old that technology is, but I imagine that the CPAP of today is better than
it's terrific.
That
yeah.
Was
I mean, I mean, the one I started with 10 years ago, they improved it about, for me, I mean, I took advantage of the improvement about 2 years ago, and it's it was a real jump. I mean, it was a real jump. It was a better machine, and the they have lots of information packed into the machine. They have all sorts of scorekeeping, you know, measuring, and I've started to use that, and it's one of my goals that there's a measurement you get every morning after you've done your sleep of what you got for the last 8 hours, you know, for your previous night. This is how many hours, and then for the last seven nights.
Does it?
And then the last 30 days they give me, and one of my goals is that it's always above eight. So the, my measurement for last night was above eight. The average for the last 7 days was above eight, and the average for the last 30 days. And that's a really important and good score for me to strive for. And you know, if I get like six or seven for some reason, either social reason or travel reason, then I really make it a big deal to actually get a 9 or a 10 hour sleep so that my my average for the last 7 days stays above eight.
You're right.
You know, you know, scorekeeping. Yeah, I'm not following the REM thing yet, and I probably will. I probably will as we get into our lifetime extender series. You know, I think it'll, I think that'll come up, and I'll take advantage of that. I think I'm going to get myself, probably during the next year, I'll get myself an Apple Watch, because apparently they're pretty good. I just saw an article in Investor's Business Daily talking about the technology of health and fitness, and Apple was mentioned very prominently as a lead technological organization in providing people with all sorts of measurements. And then on the App Store, they have all sorts of apps that you know, you can use. So it's a big deal. You know, it's a big deal, you know.
But when I,
you know, it's making people more conscious. It makes people more conscious.
Yeah. So when I continued on my day here, just the reflecting on.
You're trying to get in the story if I periodically distract you.
No, this is my point. This will be, if we're okay with this, could be the through line of the this part of the discussion, but meant to go on to branches off like this. Like, that's an important part that I think sleep is going to be equally important, you know, going forward.
For Cloudlandia as it is for the mainland.
I agree.
Actually, I think more so.
Yeah. That's, why would you say that even? That's an interesting.
Well, I'll just go on my experience that I've been far more involved with Cloudlandia since the lockdowns forced us to go from in person to Zoom. And I've just noticed that I've been much more motivated and incentivized to get my good sleep in since I've been on a steady Zoom workshop schedule than I had ever been before with a in-person schedule workshop. There's something about the Zoom that it puts more of a premium on getting good sleep.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Why is that? Why
is I don't know.
I think your brain is, I think you're using your brain more.
I think that's probably your, because it's definitely more, you're definitely at the tippy top of the intellectual level of your brain.
Well, and I also think focused attention. I noticed my focus during Zoom workshops is way more constant throughout the day than it ever was when I was doing the in-person workshops.
That's interesting. You can't, because you've got, you get that definite sense of all eyes on you when you're at this thing that they're, and you're looking at a screen with, you know, 50 other eyeballs looking at you and two more screens of people behind that. That, you know, you could see 50 eyeballs there, but you know, there's 150 eyeballs that are looking at you.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but okay, that was good for the first hour, Dan. Now, what do you got for us next hour?
But I looked at the thing, you know, the physical place. Like, so I'm in my courtyard, as I mentioned, and this, you know, I look at this, I could, in 2052, I could be here in this courtyard. This courtyard will be here. This will be the, you know, it's, you know, robust enough house to still be in, this neighborhood will still be here in 30 years.
More palm trees, probably a lot more palm trees.
Yeah. We've got these beautiful, like my neighborhood is these.
What other kind of trees besides palm do you have there? What's that?
My neighborhood specifically has 100 to 150 year old oak trees. Beautiful, big, like they've been here before we were here. And they're going to be.
So are these, there's a variety of oak tree in the South that's called a pin oak. Is this a pin oak or is it
live oak or what we're.
That's the name, called. Live oak.
Yeah.
It's called a live oak. Yeah.
And they're
we have
big,
these
beautiful.
Marvelous, you know, our place in Toronto, we have seven, I think these are called white oaks. These are white oaks. And on average, they're about 110 feet tall.
Yeah.
They're 110 feet tall, and on average, they're about 130 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know,
they're magnificent.
That's kind of, it's very similar. So there's 50 homes in here, and they're.
So they did a good job when they were putting the development in to save the trees.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. There's only 50 homes, and they're spread out throughout these, and it's like part. So you would, you know, what the tall, you know, greenery is. And so that, the fact that.
So these are seasonal trees. Are they seasonal?
No, they stay.
They stay green all year round then.
But they're dormant in terms of over the winter, they're not. They don't bloom or anything like that, but they don't shed their leaves, you know?
Oh.
Yeah, but they get a little brown, not the bright, vibrant green kind of thing. But to say that we'll be sitting here, I could physically be outside sitting here, that's not going to change in 2032. This is kind of where my thought process was to go. What's fundamentally changing? Like as soon as we entered you and I into this conversation now, today, you're the first person I've had contact with in the outside world. And the fact that we're doing something that wasn't possible in 1992 mm-hmm. and would have been very unlikely even in our relationship would be very unlikely in 1992 to have collaborative relationship with someone.
What would we have talked about? I mean, what would we have talked about? You know, like, it's like Thoreau, you know, the mid, you know, 1800 sort of philosopher. Thoreau lived in Massachusetts. There's the Walden Pond, very famous pond, and he had sort of a rustic home on Walden Pond, and he was kind of a recluse and, you know, kind of I think probably a loner and kind of an unpleasant person. But he wrote some books that became very popular and everybody wanted to know him and he didn't want to know them. And, you know, and he wrote these books, but it was the time that the Samuel Morse created the telegraph, and there was a headline in the Boston newspaper, perhaps the Globe, that said, "Now possible for Massachusetts to talk to Texas." That was the headline. Mm. And Thoreau said, "Well, that's a very interesting fact that Massachusetts can now talk to Texas, but does Massachusetts have anything to talk about to Texas?" You know, and it's a very interesting. I mean, I think he was trying to be a smartass with the comment, but it's a valid question about communication.
It's an interesting.
About communication technology. The fact that you have the ability to connect with someone doesn't necessarily mean that you have actually something to communicate to that person that you're connecting with. But we do.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's what struck me was I was thinking about that the category that you've chosen, like your you've hitched your wagon to thinking about your thinking. And that, that goes all the way back to, you know, Seneca thinking about their thinking in, you know, 35 BC. You and I would imagine at the Agora sitting having great conversations over
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you should choose Seneca, because I think that Seneca would have been excited to see the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Plato or Aristotle would have. Okay, so no. Seneca, yeah. Seneca is, you know, he's 300 years later than, he's, first of all, he's a Roman, and the other two were Greeks. But, you know, basically, when it came to Plato, I don't think he was happy with anyone unless he was talking at them.
Right.
And I think Aristotle was the same. He was a he was somebody who talked at a lot of people, and a lot of people sat there and listened and said, oh, this is amazing. This is profound. He's going to be famous, you know, a couple of thousand years from now. And everything like that. But I think Seneca was a conversationalist. He just liked having a good talk.
Yes, that was the thing. The letters, are, you know, that whole, that's what I think is like when you read the letters from a Stoic, that's been my interest or my, you know, introduction to Seneca years ago. Is you read, first of all, I was fascinated that we're talking 35 BC. We're talking, he's having conversations about, you know, thinking about your thinking.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's crazy to think that this was like the level of intellectual thought that was going on in that time frame. So I look now and I think I'm certain that you and I in 2030 or 2052 there's not going to be any shortage of thinking about your thinking available to us. You know, it's really, that's
well, one thing, if you and I are talking in 2052, I've been successful at reaching 108 in age-wise.
Yes,
so
exactly.
We'll have that to talk about. I mean, I'll fill your ear with what it's like to be over 100, you know.
Right, exactly.
Dean, you're a sub-100 person here, and you got something to look forward to here.
Yes, I love that. You're my 22-year ghost of Christmas future. That's really what it is.
Well, you know, I was just reading an article. Have you come across the name Daniel Kahneman?
I have, yes.
Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, and I think he's won a Nobel Prize. I think he's a Nobel Prize winner. And he and a partner... But he was saying, if you want to think better, bounce your thoughts off other people's thinking, you know. Mm-hmm. And I said, well,
that's what I look
not
for.
Just, I said, yeah, I said it. I said, well, yeah, if you can find them, you know.
Right. Right.
You know.
Yes.
But I said, you have to. My feeling is, in order to be interesting to someone else, why don't you start by bouncing your what of actually think about your own thinking first, so that you clean your own thinking up first a little bit, make it tidy and presentable, and then bounce your thinking off someone else's thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. So that was, you know, I thought about if you and I were having this conversation, I think that, you know, we would certainly. All the things we talk about right now are they're all digitally, we're talking about a digital world right now, but in 1992, we were firmly at the very end of a analog world and just moving into a digital world, which we had no idea how that was going to impact things, but we would have had different conversations, because it's still, you know, you think about the early coach, you know, technologies of basketball.
Well, just to talk about the technology we had available to us, you know, you'd be talking about Xerox machines. You might be talking about what were the early machines where you could send something? You could send a fax machine. We'd be talking about fax machines.
Long distance.
We've been put into, you know, we just had a time warp. Here's the thing about the Cloudlandia. Everybody thinks it's a smooth experience. There may be all sorts of swamps and quicksand and traps and, you know, that we don't know about.
Space junk.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, imagine the Chinese worried about Elon Musk having one of his satellites destroy their space station. You know, these are Cloudlandia problems. These are not normal world problems.
You just think about our, in 1992, this conversation right now, that I didn't even dial a thing. I just literally said, call Uber conference, and I'm on here and you're there. And then we just talk and we hang up and everything falls into place, that our team picks it up from there and gets it out to the world that anybody can listen to right now. Now, in 1992, Dan, first of all, even connecting like this would have been, that's all basically free. I mean, it would have first of all been, you're talking a costly international first or long distance call. That would have been the first thing.
Yeah, we're probably talking a couple $100 anyway.
And then how in the world would we have recorded it? That would have been impossible. The resources that would have required for us, we would have to maybe go to a studio. I'd be in a studio and you'd be in a studio or something like that to be able to record that. And then
we'd be paying for the studio people. And they'd probably be trying to tell us what to do.
Absolutely. And then how would we distribute it to people? How would anybody who wanted to listen to it would have to have a physical copy of it somehow?
Yeah, and they would be, I'm just trying to think, in 92, they certainly would have been cassette tapes.
Yes. Yep.
I think,
or CDs,
I think
that, maybe. The very beginning of CDs.
I was still using cassette tapes as the main. I put out albums of things in 1995, with cassette tapes, and it wasn't considered odd or anything.
Well, that was the first thing, my first exposure to you. I told you when I went to, I met my friend Alan Kern, was at the workshop, and I bought a How the Best Get Better. That was my first introduction, and I gave that to Jerry Ballinger and Terry Hunefeld too, and that's where we got Joe involved.
That's how Joe Polish got involved in the program.
That's right.
And then, you know, I mean, everything about it is 10 times easier and cheaper. You know, it's 10 times faster, 10 times easier, 10 times cheaper, and 10 times more productive, you know. So,
and I wonder now, so this was my next thought, was that you got your great environment. I'm in my courtyard in 52. I could see, I mean, it doesn't feel like.
I can't see why it would be someplace else 30 years in the future.
Right, exactly. That's exactly. So here we are. I feel the same way. And
so,
I think about that.
You're creating a formula, Dean. I don't know if you know this, but you're creating a formula that the more that you take advantage of Cloudlandia, the more you can keep the mainland the same.
I wonder. It could be, right? Like that's, I'm thinking about it as a, I was thinking about it as a tool. Of almost like,
I mean, that's
feature.
Like, that's why I don't know, you know, I think this is kind of like one of Newton's laws of thermodynamics, actually, you know, that what I notice, and I will tell you this, I've noticed it over the last 2 years, and people said, you know, has it been rough for you? And I said, actually, no, it's been probably one of the more comfortable 2 years that I can, you know, I've gotten full night's sleep every night, eating better, yeah. I'm exercising every day. I got to believe it's one of the two most regular and enjoyable 2 years of my life.
Yeah. It's pretty good, right?
Oh, it's fantastic. As a matter of fact, we were scheduled, you know, we had all of our workshops scheduled for January, and we were going to be live workshops in Toronto, live workshops in Chicago. And then, you know, we got to the end of December, and we said, you know, half the people have just phoned and canceled, you know, half the people.
Yeah.
And we said, let's just cancel them. And, you know, I said, oh, things just got simple again.
Right.
You know, and then I was
on a
podcast call. I was on a podcast call with Peter Diamandis on Friday, and he had to cancel Abundance 360 for the end of January, or first week of February, and he's moved it to April.
Yeah.
And he came on, and I said, Peter, life just got simple again. And he said, oh, you're telling me that this just got simple. He says, this is unbelievable how simple it just got. And I said, you know, there's a lesson in this. There's a lesson in this, Peter.
Yeah, there's something. I mean, that's really interesting. You know, I was all set for, I thought this year was going to be like back to regular, you know, live events at Celebration.
I thought it was going to Toronto. I thought it was going to be back London. Like when Trump was president.
Right. And that hasn't turned out to be the case.
No, it hasn't turned out. Yeah. It hasn't turned out that way, you know.
So it's a really interesting thing. But I look at that now. So I think about 2052, you and I, the best case scenario thing is we're sitting in our happy place with a perfect, most of the time, connection to each other that's automatically being recorded, and you know, we're having great communication. And I think like there's a big amount of years between 2022 and 2052, and I start to think that where this may be the place where the metaverse is really going to take off.
Yeah.
That, and I had a breakthrough thought this morning that as I was thinking that I could imagine, Dan, like, have you ever been on Google Earth, the app where you can see, like you can zoom into an area and get down and do the street view, for instance?
Yep.
So I was in Yorkville a couple of months ago on Google Earth, and it's so super high resolution now that it's just like immersive, right? Immersively being there. And I was wondering as I was thinking that, like, it's, I think, very possible that you and I would be able to create a metaverse experience of us immersively sitting in Jacques at table 10, where it is indistinguishable from being together in person there, aside from being able to, you know, maybe even that would be,
well,
I
mean, right now, if we were doing it on Zoom, you would be on your courtyard, and I'd be in my basement, and you'd see where I was. I mean, that's all right. You know, we just decided, you know, that this is that this is easier. But yeah, unfortunately, Jacques is gone.
I know. Yeah.
Not only that, but Le Select is gone.
Oh, my goodness, Dan.
Not only that, but one at the Hazleton is gone.
Yeah, you saw the whole thing. It's shut down. Wow.
Well, the Hazleton hasn't shut down. They've been bought out.
No, I mean the restaurant. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had two, team dinners there just before Christmas.
Yes.
And it was, I won't say it was packed, but, it wasn't noticeably. And I went in, I had during the Christmas to New Year's week, there's a longtime conversational partner, David Serber, that I usually meet. And I called him up and, I emailed him. I said, hey, open for lunch at 1:00. And he phoned me back and said, I said, I have a thing I can't do. So I went, I said, well, I'll just have lunch at 1:00. And I went there and it was gone. It was just gone.
Wow.
Yeah. So, so what I'm doing now with my clients and team and people in Toronto, and I'm saying, what's your favorite restaurant that's still open? And so I'm trying out a whole bunch of new restaurants as a result of this.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. What they take away from me triggers me to find new places.
Right.
So that's a cloud land. That's a mainland change. There's been many mainland changes.
Yeah. And I think, though, that, I do think that these immersive things are going to be more. I think that's a certainty, think about it, just reflectively thinking about what is going to happen 30 years from now. And I believe that there is momentum and it's, people are working on this.
Here's the thing about that. And, I was thinking about the metaverse and, and one of the things about the metaverse is I don't want to be anywhere that Mark Zuckerberg is, right off the bat.
Right.
So, I mean, if he's the attraction to go in there, count me out. But
right.
The thing is that the Navy SEALs are already training and have been training for the last 15 years. In the metaverse, mm-hmm. and the Air Force pilots totally train in the metaverse. Like the Air Force pilots now, whatever their eyes do, the plane does. They have this training now where they can see everything. They have goggles, they have their normal goggles that pilots have already, but in their goggles, it's a complete set of dials and controls and everything. And if they look at something, that triggers, so they have to be very super skillful. Well, that's the metaverse. They're right. They're operating in the metaverse. Yeah.
Yes.
And, when the Navy SEALs have a project, they have a complete 3D, virtual reality reproduction of the place that they're going to raid. And they have that already, and they wear goggles. Yeah, they don't have to wear the Oculus-type goggles. They just have goggles that they wear, and they can, they see the place, and they, they create their teamwork, of going in this door and watching out for that door and everything like that. And they put the enemies in there. They can recreate the enemies come here, so they've already had about 5 battles before they ever go into the operation where they have super smart, sneaky enemies that try to, fool them and everything. And they've trained on being fooled in a world which is, it's just in a big room. And, it's just in a big room, but they're seeing, the actual scene of the battle that they're going into, and there's enemies and then they get graded afterwards how they responded to the enemies and everything. Well, it's all being done in the metaverse.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's for, that's for real work. And my feeling is that the metaverse is going to be developed by real work, not by entertainment.
Yeah.
And what I mean real work.
But I think that's the other way around.
Gaming,
I mean, it's
like
almost
gaming. Like gaming is real work. What I mean is there's competition, there's money to be made, there's skill to be developed. And it's not just like, hey, you can go to the Grand Canyon. Well, I don't get points for going to the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
There's no scoreboard for me visiting the Grand Canyon. So that's off my list.
But it's really interesting now that I think we're in a situation where as the metaverse, you know, as Cloudlandia develops into what is a model of the mainland, taking all the best parts of the mainland, that there will be, that it will evolve to be that there are the best parts of Cloudlandia that are, you know, that you're starting to see, you're catching wind now of people buying for big dollars real physical locations in the metaverse, right? Yeah, in the
yep.
cloud. That, you know, I thought about it. It makes total sense when you think about what happened with Fortnite, where they had 10 million people at a Marshmallow concert. And,
yep.
you know, and imagine if everybody, because they went to the stadium or went to the, you know, where they were doing the amphitheater or whatever in Fortnite, everybody was there. 10 million people all having the same experience. Imagine if you could have a t-shirt stand right there.
Yep.
That you have that, you've got access to where those people are. No wonder Louis Vuitton and all these big brands are buying physical outposts in the most popular destinations in Cloudlandia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's really.
Yeah. I have a early experience of that with our first two books, you know, because our first
yeah.
two books, the Who Not How, thanks
yeah.
to you, and the Gap and the Gain are, you know, they're kind of floating in between Amazon book number 2000 and Amazon book 3000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which doesn't seem, you know, when you first hear the numbers, it doesn't sound like a too big thing. And I was talking to Ben Hardy about this.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, but get a sense of perspective about this. Your book 2000 against 10 million books that Amazon has available. So
right.
So in other words, that 10 million books are available on Amazon and you're in the top 2000. He
yeah.
said, that's like your number one. He says,
uh-huh.
it's your 2000. He says, that means that books are selling every day. He says, your book is selling every day.
Yeah.
So I have the sense, you know, this day that yesterday, today, tomorrow, probably it works out to about 500 books a week that,
mm-hmm.
you know, every, you know, 70 books sold today, 70 books sold tomorrow, 70 books sold yesterday. You know, and probably three or four people are going to read those books and sign up for a strategic coach. And
yeah.
I don't have to. And it's like a t-shirt stand, marshmallow cup.
Yeah. Exactly.
So that's sort of a metaverse sort of experience. It's an early experience.
Yeah. God bless America.
God bless America.
Exactly. I wonder now, this is kind of the thing where, I don't know whether I was having this conversation with you.
Well,
or...
that's a good question. That's a good question. I mean, that's a good comment that you made, God bless America. I got a feeling the Germans aren't doing this.
Right. Well, I got my
I got a feeling that none of the Europeans are doing this. I don't know. I mean, it may surprise me. I mean, someone
yeah.
like Ilko. Ilko in Amsterdam, I can see Ilko doing it, but you know,
yeah,
I can think of individual Europeans doing it, but I can't see Europeans as a, you know, kind of an excited army of people that doing it, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of an American sort of thing.
That's interesting. Yeah, speak of Ilko, I talk to him all the time, but that's
Ilko, when I did my American scorecard, he came
yeah.
up very high and he said, oh, this kind of explains a whole bunch of things of why ever since I've been born, I feel like a duck out of the water in Holland. He said, I'm actually an American. I said, yeah, Americans can be born anywhere.
That's funny. I got my, Happy American book. What, I forget what it's titled. American Happiness. Yeah, so I got that to look at today, the other day.
Yeah. So I think it's a sleeper book. It's one of those books that's kind of going to grow because, first of all, things are very contentious now, and America's going through a contentious period right now. It's like somebody disturbed the beehive, and there's a swarm going on right now, But I think that there's some solid things that go on regardless of circumstances. I think there's some DNA, American DNA, that just keeps going forward. That's what I've tried to identify in the book. But, the interesting thing is that I think that you and I are similar, that we like a lot of novelty, but we also like a lot of stuff to be regular.
I love a good, firm foundation with novelty.
Yeah.
I'll describe that. That's Joe Polish and I relationship is the, if we think about the, I'm like the steam, the cruise ship going steadily in one direction kind of thing. And Joe's in the back doing wakeboard tricks and going off on the angles and the stuff. But it all comes back. It's all guarded by the through line of the cruise ship going in one steady direction.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then, Fort Lauderdale to Fort Lauderdale. It always follows this route,
That's right.
And 7 days from now, we'll be back in Fort Lauderdale. And who knows what's happened along the way.
That's right.
Yeah. And I think, I think you need something that's constant so that things can be new and spontaneous. Yeah. I think you need a solid base in order to have a lot of experimentation and, creativity and think I really believe. And my feeling is that, we're finding out a lot during this period about what people want constant in their lives and what they're willing to have open to, new things, new possibilities and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's so good. I think this whole fun exercise, we've just scratched the surface of the depth of the things because, I was thinking about food. Right now I have access to every restaurant within any distance of here could have food. I can get any meal delivered to my door in 30 minutes. And, you think about where that, what's your, I know you would take food. You had the caterer when you were doing the live workshops. What's your food situation now?
Well, it's the same. Our caterer has just continued on with his delivery to us personally throughout the session, and we've gotten him some new personal customers. I mean, he's had it's been a tough time for him because, we were half his income, of everything he did because we were just. We on a yearly basis before the lockdown, we served 25,000 meals a year. That's a big, it's pretty good operation. Yeah. And he would be half of it. He would be half of it. And then we'd have some in other places and he would do it. And he does a great job and, he's very open to suggestions and, change ups in there, but he's continued on all of our food for the last 2 years at the house has come through with Christopher Wood.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but I think that a time like now really sorts things out between that which you want to be predictable and that which you want to be surprising.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you want that. That's an interesting. Yeah. I can't wait to see what old Joe's been up to. on his sabbatical, you know, I know they've made a lot of...
You know, Joe, when I met Joe, couldn't have done a half hour sabbatical.
Right. Yeah.
But I, from my perception, I think he's done his year really well.
Yes, I do too. And yeah. People think he's been off like navel gazing and doing. So, I mean, he's been doing stuff, but not, you know, that's the great thing about a sabbatical is you do what you want to do. It's not.
Well, yeah,
no,
it's not that you're disengaged. You're not
right,
disengaged.
Exactly.
You're just engaged with something else.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah. And that's what the sense. So I talked to him on an average of once a month, Babs and I did, you know, and we caught up with him, but it was strictly about talking about, you know, what he was discovering and, you know, and everything like that. But it wasn't about, we never reported, you know, on the genius. I sent him a note after our last, and when would that have been? November, I think. Well, the big one in November.
Yeah, right.
And I said, your team has really done you proud.
Yeah.
During the year. And I think they've all grown. And I think that you've got a lot of great backup support and other people who can run one of your meetings. And you probably, you know, there's probably a dozen people who you can feel totally confident that if for some reason you wanted them to handle a meeting, you could do that. And you didn't know that the year before.
Right.
Yeah. You know who my champ was for that entire year was Howard Getson.
Yes.
Howard
but
put
Timothy
on
Paulson
a,
too. Timothy Paulson was
oh,
the
and
bright
Tim
and, shiny
at,
star.
And Tim at the end.
Yeah,
I told Tim, you've been hiding for 11 years. I said,
yeah.
You've been hiding, but he really, the last, when he did the big annual event in November, I said, what? I said, you know, you're amazing. Why have you been hiding? yeah. So anyway.
That's awesome. Okay. Thanks,
yeah,
Dan.
But I'm on next week. We're on the next 2 weeks, so that's not
Absolutely.
A problem.
Me too.
Okay. Okay, bye.
Okay. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.